Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome one and all to Trisha's True Crime Radio. Thank you for joining me tonight. Now, Professor Robert Blecker, the author of The Death of Punishment, was going to be here this week. He will join us next week. He will be here and he will give us the most amazing show. And sorry, I'm having a little bit of technical difficulty here. Everybody stand by. We'll get this done here. Hold on. There we go. Anyway, he was scheduled to be here, and you know how things happen. People change, people get messed up, people forget to send emails to guests. But the good news is the good professor is very understanding, and he'll be here next week to talk about his book, The Death of Punishment. You have another week to get out there and get this book and read it, and trust me, it will change the way you think about things. And we have some amazing audio bits to play for you as well from prisoners on death row and from the people who guard them, and you will be astounded. That's for next week. This week, tonight, we have a great show as well. We'll be telling you more about that in a moment. We also have a great sponsor. It's Pause for Purple Hearts in Palo Alto, California. Pause for Purple Hearts is the first program of its kind to offer therapeutic intervention for veterans and active duty military personnel by teaching those with post-traumatic stress disorder to train service dogs for their comrades with comrade-related injuries. Please just take a moment. Go to www.pauseforpurplehearts.org. And it's time for the second time for the year 2014. We are about to be gooed, legal gooed. That is, opinions expressed on Trisha's True Crime Radio are those of the hosts and guests. Do remember that Trisha's True Crime Radio is a completely separate entity from WebSleuths.com, LLC, and ForumsForJustice.org. In other words, if you hear something on this show that upsets you, you don't run to the forums, my darling. No, you come to me. That's Trisha in the Trisha's True Crime Radio, and I'll make you happy again. Joining us later is my wonderful co-host, Michael in Minnesota, also Beth Karras from Wild About Trials. Beth will update us on two upcoming trials, the penalty phase of the Jodi Arias trial, and Marissa Alexander. She's the one who lost her Stand Your Ground case in Florida after firing a warning shot at her abusive husband. She's not in jail, but she might be thrown back in, according to Huffington Post, for running errands. Yes, Beth will update us on that. Levi Page, our human computer of true crime facts and information, will be with us as well. But first, I have a question I want to ask you. Would any of you put a feeding tube in a corpse? No, you wouldn't. Well, according to the expert, that's exactly what is happening to 13-year-old Jahi McMath. This case is so tragic. Jahi went into the hospital for a routine tonsillectomy and ended up brain dead. She's 13 years old. Now, brain dead means just that. There is not one microscopic bit of light in the brain scan. Even her brain stem is not functioning. Jahi has been declared legally dead. She is dead. Yet her family has been given the false hope that she can be kept alive. Here's the deal, and this is pretty gruesome. Jahi will begin, if she hasn't already, begin to literally decompose. Her organs will shrivel up. Now, dear God in heaven, may nothing ever happen to my son, because who's to say what I would do? I wouldn't want to face his death. I understand what the family, what their thinking is. I get it. However, I think it's unfair of the people surrounding the McMath family to give them false hope, and that's what it is. It's false hope. Jahi McMath is considered a corpse by the experts in the medical community. Her heart is artificially beating and her lungs are artificially inflated to give the appearance of being alive, but she is not. Now, according to an article in USA Today, unlike patients in a vegetative state who have some brain activity, people declared brain dead are no longer alive, says Lawrence McCullough. He's a professor at the Center for Medical Ethics and Health Policy at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston. The term brain death simply refers to the method of determining death: stroke, heart attack, brain death. See how it works? McCullough says he worries about the emotional, spiritual, and financial damage that the parents will suffer. Insurance, he says, doesn't pay for dead people. He also worries about the psychological effect of seeing the girl's body, which already is said to be deteriorating, continue to break down. Are there some living cells in her body, he says? Not all cells die at once. It takes time. But her body will start to break down and decay. It's not a matter of when, and it's not a matter of whether. It's just a matter of when, I should say. They are trying to ventilate a corpse. There are no ethical issues in the care of someone who has been declared brain dead, he says, because the patient is now a corpse. I wish the McMath family wasn't given this false hope. It breaks my heart to see them on the news, to hear them talk about their daughter and how she's doing and painting her fingernails. And it is so tragic. You've got to admit it. You understand where they're coming from. Nobody would want to admit that their child has died. But these unnamed professionals who have given this family totally false hope, let's hope the family sees the truth of the situation before it becomes not only more heartbreaking, but more gruesome as well. And on that happy note, let's go to our guest tonight. Yes, it's the one and only Michael in Minnesota. How are you, Michael?
Hi, Tricia. I'm just great. Thank you. Thank you.
Good. And we have Beth Karras. Beth, how are you doing?
I'm fine.
Good.
Had kind of
and
a tough day today. Pulled a muscle. Can't really walk. I canceled all my plans. So I'm like, oh, I'm in such pain.
Well, just
sit
down.
That's okay. It peaked today. I'll be better in the next few days.
Just sit down. If you have any drugs, take them, as many as possible. This show is open to that. And, in fact, we encourage people to take drugs so they can talk, you know, more freely and openly and then regret it.
No, I took one Advil. That's it.
Okay. Okay, good.
We
do feel for you, Beth. And I believe
Tricia,
this is
promoting drug abuse. Oh, God.
Isn't that terrible? It's terrible. And I believe this is Levi Page. Levi, is that you, my darling?
Hi, it is, Tricia. Thanks for having
me
on.
Did you hear how I introduced you? You are our human computer of true crime facts and information. You know everything and remember everything. It's amazing. You're absolutely amazing. You're superhuman.
I don't think so.
Superhuman. Okay, well, first of all, we're going to go to Beth Karras. Now, Beth, there are some cases coming up in the year 2014 that everybody is interested in, and you've been working on them, and you've got kind of some detailed information. Which one would you like to start with first?
Well, let me just tell you, Marissa Alexander, whose retrial is coming up on March 31st, you mentioned, you know, she had the hearing on Friday. Angela Corey's office in Jacksonville, Florida, wanted to have her bond revoked, but Marissa Alexander won that hearing. So she remains house arrest pending her retrial. She is the woman who fired the warning shot at her abusive significant other on August 1st, 2010, a man named Rico Gray. But she was prosecuted nonetheless and got a 20-year sentence for aggravated assault. She fired a shot that it didn't go straight up into the ceiling. He says it kind of narrowly missed his head. It went through the kitchen wall and then lodged in the living room ceiling. In any event, I've talked to people who think Angela Corey really overreached in charging George Zimmerman with murder, but do not think that she overreached in charging Marissa Alexander, because Marissa Alexander went into the garage to retrieve her gun out of her car. She could have left, and she didn't, and she went back in and scared him. In any event, in terms of a self-defense case, you know, there are people who see this case very differently from George Zimmerman. But she's out pending her retrial, which is March 31st. But I wanted to just mention something. A lot of people think that regarding the Jodi Arias case, you know, she has another hearing tomorrow, that there's a motion pending to challenge the judge's order disallowing cameras and electronic devices in the court. Well, I spoke to the attorney who we used to use routinely in Arizona. He's based in downtown Phoenix. I spoke to him last week, and it doesn't mean another attorney is not involved, but this attorney, whom CNN has used, the locals use, is not involved in any current motion. There's no motion that he's aware of pending right now challenging the judge's order. Doesn't mean there won't be a challenge. There may be. And he said the Arizona Supreme Court recently amended the court rules regarding devices in the courtroom. It's now 122.1. Rule 122 is the one that governs devices. And it allows devices, computers, phones for receiving and transmitting information. He said maybe there could be a challenge, and maybe should be a challenge. I mean, I'm speaking for myself at this point, should be a challenge to the judge's ban on electronic devices in the courtroom. So if somebody will do it, I mean, somebody in the media who will do it, I don't know. I mean, I don't think that anyone from Turner Broadcasting is, but I'm not speaking for them because I'm not there anymore. So
well, don't you think, Beth, don't you think somebody is going to step up and file something? Don't you think that's just kind of a given, or maybe not?
Maybe they'll do it closer to trial. Maybe mm-hmm. they'll do it closer to trial. But the judge has shut down information coming out. What she does, and I remember her doing this a little bit during the trial, and I was there for every day of it, she is having these hearings in chambers. So there's a very small number of people who are in chambers. So mm-hmm. now she knows if any information gets out, it's somebody in that room who leaked it, and she can hold them accountable. I suspect that all these hearings now are called oral arguments - undesignated. And I know Stephen Alexander had posted on Facebook that there was going to be a trial in mid-February. And I'm wondering, I don't know if this is the case, but I'm wondering if Juan Martinez is limiting what he tells the family now because they're repeating it. So I don't know what's going on, and there's no challenge to her holding these closed hearings, which mm-hmm. I guess are in her discretion. I mean, I've read the law in Arizona. It's really unlike other states, kind of allowing the judge to just close these hearings when the public should be there. Should have mm-hmm. and does have a right to know what's going on. These are public courtrooms. So, but without a challenge, it's going to stay the way it is. So that's what's happening in Jody Arias. But the case that HLN was going to cover mm-hmm. and was all over, but obviously has backed off now, starts jury selection January 21st, unless there's a little glitch. There's a hearing later this week or later this week. Yeah, I think later this week to finalize everything. And it's Marissa DeVault. And I know mm-hmm. Michael knows the facts of that case actually better than I do. He's got some of the court documents. So he can tell you what's happening with Marissa DeVault. But it's a capital case. She's been locked up for quite a while now, killed her husband with a hammer. She knows Jody. They've been in the Maricopa jail, the Estrella jail, together, even though Jody is segregated now. But, you know, mm-hmm. they know each other. And that case starts January 21st. There had been quite a bit of attention on that case. So those are the highlights for January. Oh, and then verdict in Amanda Knox is expected for on January 30th.
Let me just go back to Marissa for just a moment. DeVault, she killed her husband with a hammer. I'm assuming she's saying that he was abusive. Was he asleep?
Yeah.
What are the details there?
Well, Michael will have to tell you about that. He's got the documents. I really don't.
Yes,
I haven't worked on that case yet.
Michael, go for it.
Yes, I can tell you everything about the case. I'm working... Actually, somebody had sent Beth a flash drive that contained all of the court documents, and
mm-hmm.
so I've been working on a project for Beth to put all of this together, and in doing so, I read every single court document associated with this case, so I do know everything about it. She bludgeoned her husband, this Marissa DeVault bludgeoned her husband, Dale Harrell, on January 14th of 2009.
Mm-hmm.
And it took him until February 9th to actually pass away. It was a tragic, tragic story. The backstory, I mean, this girl, Marissa DeVault, had an affair with this man 2 years prior, before this occurred. His name was Flores, not
mm-hmm.
Mr. Alan Flores, not at all related to our Flores, I don't believe. But she lied to him and claimed that her stepfather had passed away and she would be coming into this large sum of money. Could he forward her money? And so Mr. Flores did. And by the time all the sums were tallied and totaled and he had her sign a promissory note, she was into Mr. Flores for $362,000.
Oh, my
God. Well, a month
God.
Before she murdered her husband, she... took out a $500,000 life insurance policy on him so that she could not only pay off Mr. Flores, but then have a little bit extra for herself and her roommate, Stanley Cook, who was also part of this heinous crime she committed against her husband. Now, keeping in mind that the husband passed away on February 9th, February 10th, Marissa and this Stanley Cook, the roommate, plotted to make it appear that Marissa was attacked while out jogging. She administered pain pills to herself, and he beat her, punched her with his fist, and then, get this, took a sledgehammer to her ankles. and dropped her alongside the road. She called the police, claiming that she had been out jogging and had been attacked by this group. She couldn't identify them, although she said she was sure it wasn't Flores or Cook.
Mm-hmm.
But she was trying to get a larger payout or an immediate payout from the – she wanted it to be paralyzed. But
mm-hmm.
Stanley Cook said, the only way I can knowingly paralyze you is to shoot you in the spine, and there's just too much damage. I could hit an organ that could kill you. So they went after her ankles with a sledgehammer. It's a terrible tragedy.
This is just awful.
It's a horrible story. It's the most incredible story.
I have a question about this. You say that she was cellmates with she knew Jodi Arias. She was cellmates with her. I want to know when this.
They're just in the jail together.
When was this? Because she's claiming, I'm not familiar with all the facts of this case, but she is also claiming that she was an abused woman. And she also went to elaborate plots to make it up like a group attacked her. And this is very similar to Jody's defense. So I'm wondering if Jodi didn't, plot with this woman.
Well, it
no,
was dependent upon
think...
dates. I don't. When? What was the date of her arrest, Michael?
Her original arrest, well, they first filed charges of second-degree murder before all the facts were known. And then once he died, then they handed down the facts became known. Then they charged her with her first-degree murder, and that happened February 24th. The papers were filed of 2009.
Okay.
Okay. So, and Levi, I would want to know, did she speak to the police before she ever got to Estrella Jail and say, no, he's been abusing me? If she said it before she had any contact with Jodi, maybe she wasn't influenced by Jodi. But, Jodi was already under arrest. Her case was already out there in that community. It was already public. But Jodi wasn't asserting self-defense initially. Remember, that was her third explanation.
Mm-hmm.
So
didn't happen until 2010 that she came up, or 11 when she came up with the abuse theory, right?
Maybe they came up with it together. And I don't think they were cellmates, Jodi was there a long time, so maybe at some point they were, but I don't think they were, but maybe.
Okay. Let me stop everybody. Oh, Michael, hold on. I just want to stop everybody real quickly and update. We are talking with Beth Karras, also Levi Page and Michael in Minnesota. Our guest for this week, Professor Robert Blecker, will be here next week to talk about his book, The Death of Punishment. And Michael is just filling us in on a case that Beth is also working on. It's a case of Marissa Duval. She had bludgeoned her husband to death with a hammer, and she's claiming abuse, correct? That's the claim. And what kind of case does she have, Michael? Give us an outline here. Is it any good?
Well, no. Well, it depends on how you look at it. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Now the defense has made several motions, of course. She was in the hospital for her injuries, obviously. And she had claimed, first of all, that she was underneath her husband while he was attacking her in the bed and that she was beating him with this hammer, and she would have continued to strike him if the roommate had not come in and stopped her assault on him. But because she had claimed to be choked out, she was taken to the hospital where they administered Ativan and one other drug, and that name is escaping me. So her defense has filed a motion trying to exclude anything she offered in the police interrogations or videos or interviews with her that occurred in the hospital within 12 hours, because they claim the half-life or the length of time it takes for the drugs to leave the system was
mm-hmm.
9 to 16 hours, and so she may not, the truthfulness of her statements can be called into question. But then all the stories changed, and of course Mr. Flores, the boyfriend, is going to be testifying, and
mm-hmm.
this cook has since changed the story, so the truth came out. But in one of the many papers I saw, her defense team has laid out a history of abuse that started supposedly when she was in the second and third grade, and went on through her entire life. They even went so far as to claim that her Daryl was pimping her out, and forcing her to sleep with other men. And so I agree with Levi. No one ever said Travis pimped out Jody.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, very, very similar. The police have been trying to get the records. There are several motions to release medical records from all of the hospitals in the area, but the defense is trying to fight it, which why would they fight it if there was actually a record of her having been physically abused ever at
right.
the hospitals? That would only bolster her claim. So
yes.
I don't know much ado about nothing, I'm sure. You know, I don't know anything about the victim except he is now dead. And it's a shame. I can't wait till people can start speaking to his character. I don't know if he was a wonderful human being. I do know that he adopted the oldest daughter of Marissa, legally adopted her. Her name was Rihanna. And then the two had two children together. And they have not seen their mother. They were allowed at one point to have a telephone conversation with her in court, and the defense really wanted to get the opinion of these children, get this, as to whether how they felt about their mother's punishment if she should
mm-hmm.
be given death. And the judge said, you can't ask children that question. That's too weighty. I mean, they can't even decide on their own if they want to spend Monday and Wednesday at their dad's house without hurting
right.
their mom's feeling. You can't ask children how they would feel. And there was a question as to whether Rihanna was actually considered a victim because she was older and adopted and not Daryl's biological daughter.
Mm-hmm.
But the judge ruled that she is, in fact, a victim in this case and is a daughter, and therefore the judge disallowed the defense from speaking to her. Again, they did speak with her and interview her at one point. Her comment was, let's just get this over with. So
yeah.
while she loves her mother, she hates what he did, and she will not be involved in the defense.
And if I can add, so jury selection begins right now, January 21st. It's a capital case, so they have to get a death-qualified jury and all that.
Mm-hmm.
It's in front of a judge named Steinle, Steinle, Steinle. He's already approved a camera in there. I don't
mm-hmm.
know if any of the locals are going to be there. I think Wild About Trial might stream it if somebody's there, you know, with a camera. I can't really speak for them. I just know that I have pitched this to them. So be on the lookout in case it actually does go forward. There's a date, the court date, as I mentioned, late next week, where the judge will finalize. I don't know if there are, you know, plea discussions or anything. I'm not privy to what's going on. But you can check out the minute entries, you know, just the same way you check out Jody Arias' case. And Marissa Duvault is spelled DeVault, DeVault, one word.
Correct.
Okay, very good. I'm kind of jumping around here because we have a lot going on in the chat room. First, I want to tell Beth that everybody is sending you kisses and hugs and literally saying how much they miss you and they want you back on the air, and they just love you. They do. So that,
thank you so much. I'm working on things. You know what? I wanted to take the latter half of last year to just kind of chill and get in touch with myself again. I lived in hotels for 6 to 9 months a year for 19 consecutive years. So
mm-hmm.
I really needed to catch my breath. But I am working on things, and when I can go public, I will. I've got lots
good.
Of irons in the fire.
Well, good. You let us know first because, you know, we have to know things first because we're the nosiest. So,
okay.
And also, there is a question from the chat room, and it's about a rumor that maybe, Beth, that you have heard about. And maybe even, Michael, you might be able to address this. And this comes from, let's see, I can't see the name. But anyway, want to know if you know anything about the rumor about Tanisha Alexander Sorensen being barred from Judge Sherry's chambers. Do you know anything? Oh, it was Sulamith that wanted this. Do you know anything about that rumor?
I do not know anything about that rumor, so I can't say whether or not it's true. But if it's true, it's consistent with what I believe is going on, and which I explained earlier, why the judge is holding hearings in her chambers. And if she believes there's a leak and it's coming from
mm-hmm.
the Alexander family, whoever was in chambers is going to be banned. I mean, there are so many siblings that you know, maybe the judge will say somebody else can come, but if you if this information gets out, you're banned also. So I, you know,
right.
I don't know if it's true. I had not heard it, but it wouldn't surprise me if Judge Stevens did something like that.
So, and give us the dates again on the Jody Arias next, the next court date that they're going to be discussing things. I don't know. I don't know what the heck when
tomorrow.
They're going to actually go through it. It's tomorrow, okay?
Yes.
And what do you expect to happen, if anything, tomorrow?
Well, it's no, it's undesignated. You know, oral arguments undesignated. So I have no idea if they really are gearing up for trial and they're going over jury questionnaires, or you know, I don't know. There's just no
mm-hmm.
information coming out, which is so frustrating. I've never really seen anything like it, going from, you know, so much information, this televised trial, high profile, and the judge just shut it down. And but there's no challenge to it. I think the judge could get reversed on some of these rulings, personally,
mm-hmm.
that's what I think, but no one's challenging it. So I don't know what's going on. I just monitor the minute entries like everybody else.
Levi Page, I want to go to you, and this is a question because you have the finger on the pulse of what people are thinking. Do you think that the public is, they say they're tired of Jody Arias, but do you really think people are tired, or will she constantly be a big draw when it comes to information and her court case?
Well, that's funny, Tricia, because right whenever, before I was going to come on the show, I posted a link on my Facebook page that I was going to be on Trisha's True Crime Radio talking about the Jody Arias case tonight, and immediately after I put that up there, someone came on and lambasted the both of us. Why are you and Trisha giving Jody Arias any attention? I'm sick of her. So I do think that there is that sentiment out there that people are tired of hearing about her because, listen, her trial lasted an extremely long time. That trial dragged on. She was
mm-hmm.
on the stand for weeks. So I can understand why people would be tired of her, but she is still a hot topic out there. You go to the blogs, the message boards, Twitter, people are still talking about her. Just like Casey Anthony, remember how long Casey Anthony was in the news after her acquittal, even
mm-hmm.
though Jody Arias was convicted? There were people that followed every little thing, and I think Casey Anthony, I think people are finally have moved on, and Casey Anthony is smart and kept a low profile, but Jody Arias is not keeping a low profile, because you type in Jody Arias into Google search and you get the latest news articles regarding Jody. She's right now she's selling bands. People can go to one of her supporters' websites. I'm not going to give it publicity, but they can buy
mm-hmm.
Jody bands for $25, and there's someone else out there that's also making bands as well, and the Jody Arias supporters are angry because Jody's not getting those profits. If you want the Jody band, it's a certain color. So there's petty stuff like that going on. But Beth is right. The court proceedings are very, very secret, and I think, in my opinion, that is unconstitutional because I don't think that our government should operate in secrecy. I think the public
no.
has a constitutional right to know what's going on, because they're paying for the judge's salary, they're paying for the defense attorney's salary in this case, and the prosecutor's salary in this case, and they can't know what's going on. I think that's a problem.
Yeah, I agree with you 100% on that. So we're kind of jumping around here. We have Beth Karras with us, my co-host Michael in Minnesota, also Levi Page, and we're talking about the cases that are coming up for the year 2014. Next week, we will have Professor Robert Blecker on to discuss his amazing, incredible book, The Death of Punishment. So, Beth, where do we stand now? We have the Jody Arias tomorrow. And then what's the next one? I know you have some more in-depth information.
Well,
I'm just going to turn it over to you and let you go.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, just looking at January, there's a couple of hearings in Martin McNeil, one to do with the lengthy motion the defense filed to set aside the verdict, give him a new trial, saying that
mm-hmm.
one of the jailhouse informants lied. I haven't read the motion, but they say it's a 30-page motion. That January 16th is a telephone conference. So Martin McNeil hasn't been sentenced yet on the murder because of this pending motion. So that's
mm-hmm.
January 16th. And January 20th, rebuttal arguments. So they're still doing arguments in Amanda Knox and Rafaela Solecito's murder retrial, but I told you that the verdict is expected the 30th. January 21st, Marissa Duvall. January 23rd, oral arguments on Mark McNeil's motion to dismiss the sexual abuse case or at least remove the Utah County prosecutors from handling it. That's
why
the defense
has.
Well,
I mean, what?
I don't know.
What reason would they?
I haven't read the motion. I just know that that's the reason for it. But I believe they are claiming that the prosecution that withheld some information from them or something. I suspect that they won't win that, but who knows? But moving into February, there's a trial coming up on February 3rd. I'm also hoping there's a camera in there. I'm sure, actually, you know, I'm pretty confident there'll be a camera, but it might just be a local camera, but it'll be hopefully streamed. And that's Michael Dunn, yet another Jacksonville, Florida case, prosecuted by Angela Corey. And he's the guy who fired into the parked car at the convenience store gas station on November 23rd, 2012. Kids were playing loud music. He asked them to turn it down. He thought one of them displayed a gun. He fired into the car. He killed one of the kids. And he's charged with first-degree murder. First-degree murder. Michael Dunn. It's another stand-your-ground case. And it's a big case. It's got
How does it look? How does it, I mean, is it just from what we know now?
It's a strong case, Trisha. I mean, the guy had been drinking. He had been to his son's wedding, and he had been drinking. And he claimed, like Beth said, that one of the kids inside Jordan Davis's vehicle had had a gun, but there was no gun found in the vehicle. And he never called police, and he was arrested 173 miles away from the shooting. So he shot and then took off.
So this is not a good one for Stand Your Ground. This makes a mockery of Stand Your Ground. This guy just sounds like he was drunk, got mad at some teenagers playing loud music. And when you get mad and you're drunk and you have a gun, guess what happens? Stuff like this.
First degree might be a little high. Maybe it's a second degree case. First degree might be a little high, but, you know, Angela Corey is shooting high and maybe won't care if it's a second degree murder conviction. And then February 11th, a preliminary hearing, finally, in the Charlotte-Mecklenburg police officer's case, Randall Carrick. Remember, he's charged with voluntary manslaughter after he shot and killed the unarmed Jonathan Farrell, who had had a car accident and, you know, was looking for help, and the officer felt, like, threatened when this man was coming toward him. He killed him. That was September 14th, just last year. Now, it's a preliminary hearing, not a trial. Preliminary hearings are in lieu of grand jury. Right, states sometimes will do one or the other. I only did grand juries. Maybe I did one preliminary hearing when I was a prosecutor, but we do grand juries as a rule. In New York and California, they do almost exclusively preliminary hearings. So this is North Carolina, preliminary hearing. And so that will kick it to the higher court, assuming they come back with the same charge he's currently facing, voluntary manslaughter. So that's February 11th. And then two big trials on March 3rd. John Goodman.
Really?
The multimillionaire Bentley driver, DUI, manslaughter, retrial on March 3rd, although his lawyers just filed this huge motion to dismiss the case. And
tell us that story. Tell us that story, because I'm familiar with it, but I can't remember the details.
Yeah. Okay, this was February 2010. John Goodman is the founder of the International Polo Club, and he at one point was a billionaire. He's a multimillionaire now. He was drunk. He'd been out, you know, at one of the local, you know, on the polo club bars, and he was driving past his estate. He missed the turn, it appears. I've been to the intersection. And he drove to an intersection in Wellington, Florida, that's Palm Beach County, overshooting his home. It's just a stop sign. There's no stoplight. And he just went through it, speeding, drunk, running a stop sign. And just at that moment, I think it was like 1 in the morning or something, a car was coming through, driven by a 23-year-old boy who was a college student, Scott Wilson, coming home for the weekend to celebrate his sister's birthday. The Bentley, I think it was a Hyundai he had, pushed the car across the street and into a canal. It flipped into a canal. Scott Wilson wasn't speeding. He wasn't drunk. He had his seatbelt on, but the car flipped over and he drowned.
Oh, my God.
And what John Goodman did was leave the scene. He wandered by foot. He left his car there. He wandered by foot straight beyond the canal, and he wandered to a house. It was an hour before he called 911, but in the interim, a car came along. and called 911, and they didn't even know there was a car in the canal at first. There was this abandoned Bentley. And he did eventually call 911, but that's after calling his girlfriend. Remember he adopted his girlfriend before trial so he could
that's right.
protect some of his estate? Remember that? Yeah.
That's
so,
right. Now, but here's the thing. If this were you or me, and please, dear God, I don't think either of us would ever do this, but if it was just average, you know, Joe Blow driving along, he'd be arrested. There wouldn't be any of this, and it would be a done deal. What in the name of all that is holy is this guy going to use for his defense?
Well, he did go to trial and get convicted. He did get a 16-year sentence. He was convicted of both DUI manslaughter and vehicular homicide.
Okay. Oh, good. Okay.
And he got a new trial because of jury misconduct.
What was the jury misconduct? What happened?
One juror in particular, well, they had a hearing because this same juror, he did two different things. He conducted his own experiment or something, you know, with drinks and alcohol. I don't know if he drank them, but he was just, like, measuring. It's some experiment. And you're not supposed to do that. You're told not to go outside the evidence from the courtroom. And so the judge held a hearing and said, harmless error. I'm not going to overturn the verdict. Then the same juror self-publishes an e-book, and he talks about his experience as a juror, and he says in the book, I didn't read it, I just read reports, that his wife, had a DUI conviction once, pre-trial, before the trial, which he didn't disclose.
He was
absolutely asked about that in jury selection, and he did not disclose that he had any family member, anyone close to him who had a DUI conviction. So that was grounds. The judge is like, wow, and you know, this guy's a problem.
That's understandable. That's understandable. I can see why, you know, I think that was a wise move to overturn it, although I can't imagine what this guy said at his trial, what they could argue. So he gets a new trial.
Well, they said the accelerator on the Bentley or something malfunctioned.
Oh, please.
But there wasn't really, anyway, it wasn't a winning argument, right? But the state has since released the Bentley. They it's not impounded anymore. You know, he was convicted. Mm-hmm. He had challenged the conviction once and lost, and the state, they released the Bentley. That's the basis of the motion to dismiss, which I just got a copy of on Friday. It was just filed on Thursday night, I think. They're saying, you know, because they don't have the Bentley to test a malfunction, that the case should be dismissed. I have no idea what will happen. So maybe that'll delay his March 3rd trial. And Oscar Pistorius is going to trial on the 3rd, too, in South Africa.
And tell us what that is about.
Oscar Pistorius is accused of murdering
his
model
girlfriend
Reva Steenkamp.
That's right.
Steenkamp.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
Okay.
Blade Runner.
Yeah. He's the guy with the things on his legs. And yes. Levi Page.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say
something about a current trial that's going on. I don't know if any of you all have been following this trial in Orange County, California. But it is two police officers who were fired from Fullerton, California. They are Jay Cincinelli and Manuel Ramos, and the jury's deliberating that now. They're going to continue Monday, but they're accused with beating. They used batons and stun guns, a homeless schizophrenic man to death.
That's right.
His name is Kelly Thomas, and the entire incident was actually caught on a surveillance video.
It is
from the location where this altercation occurred. I forgot where the altercation occurred, but it's 33 minutes long, and most of it is captured on there. There's a couple of minutes where they're not in direct focus of the camera, but I watched it, and it's extremely disturbing. This Kelly Thomas is schizophrenic, and apparently he had been throwing rocks and harassing people at this place that he's been known to hang out at. And the closing argument wrapped up, and the prosecution had described one of the cops, Manuel Ramos, who's charged with second degree murder, involuntary manslaughter, and excessive force. He described him as a bully because he was overheard saying, see these fists, they're getting ready to F you up. during the altercation when he was trying to constrain Kelly Thomas. And the second cop, Jason Sinelli, is charged with involuntary manslaughter and excessive force. And Manuel Ramos is the first police officer in Orange County, California, that has been charged with committing a murder while he was supposed to be on duty. So
and,
this
you know,
is a big
you,
case in Southern California.
And
the defense
watched,
of the police officers, the defense is that Kelly Thomas was using drugs, that he had a diseased heart, and that he was really out of control. He was schizophrenic, and the police were having problems controlling him, so therefore the force that they used was necessary.
No, if you watch that video, let me tell you, Levi, you're absolutely right. It is extremely disturbing. And here's the thing. If he was that out of control, tase him. Tase him. You know, tase
him.
And then,
they tased him multiple times. I even seen one of the officers kick him in the video whenever I watched it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they kick him. They do everything to him. But, I mean, wasn't he, if I remember correctly, Levi, wasn't he just kind of laying there after a while and they were still just pounding on him?
No, I watched the video from start to finish, and you see the police officer there talking to him. It doesn't seem at first, you know, it can't pick up everything. We can't hear every word that they're saying, but it doesn't seem at first when you watch it that he's out of control. They're talking to each other. At one point, Kelly Thomas sits down on the sidewalk and they continue talking. And then Kelly Thomas does walk off. He gets up to walk off, and I think the police officer wants to constrain him. And Kelly Thomas does put his hands up, but the officer immediately tries to settle him down, get him under control, and an altercation happens. And you can hear Kelly Thomas say, "Sorry, dude, I'm sorry, dude, sorry, sorry."
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of it, I think his final words were, "Help me, God, help me, Dad." And then he was left in a pool of blood, and he died in the hospital 5 days later. But this trial has been streaming. I've watched bits and pieces. I couldn't watch all of it, but it's been streaming on Wild About Trial, and it's a very big trial in Southern California, and I'm interested in what's going to happen there. I talked to Holly Hughes, a criminal defense attorney out of Atlanta, regular guest on CNN, and we talked about this on my show Thursday night, and she thinks that it's probably not going to be a second-degree murder, probably a manslaughter or an excessive force. She thinks that it may have been overcharged because, again, this guy is schizophrenic. She said mentally ill people can act out, and the jury may cut the police officers some slack because he was throwing rocks at people. That's why the police were called. They just didn't come for no reason. He was throwing rocks at people. So, it may be a compromise verdict.
The thing is, a mentally ill person shouldn't be out on the street, and that's a big problem.
I know.
That's sad.
It's sad. And I wanted to point out, I know the defense said that he was on drugs, but not that he was on drugs, but that he had a heart condition based on his drug use. Apparently, there were no drugs or alcohol found in Kelly Thomas's body when he went to the hospital.
Mm-hmm. So it was just his unfortunate mental illness that was in full swing. Oh, that is such a tragic, tragic video to watch. It really is heartbreaking and sickening, too. We haven't heard from our co-host, Michael, in Minnesota for a long time. Michael, are you still there?
Absolutely, I'm here. I'm taking in every word. I watched the video, too, in its entirety, and I didn't understand why the cops kept insisting on searching his bag. It seemed like that's what he was resisting. Like, why do you want to look in my bag? And he seemed so docile in the first several minutes of that. And it just seems like somehow police need to be trained to handle the mentally ill so that they can de-escalate rather than escalate.
Boy, that's the truth. Amen. That is
so docile at the beginning.
That is just tragic. It really was. Okay, Beth, so we've gotten through February and parts of March. What else is coming up? I mean,
well,
we've got a lot of stuff.
Well, as far as I've gone, my, my calendar, I've only done through March right now. I got to tell you, when, you know, I was at Court TV almost the entire existence of the network. It was later renamed In Session on True TV, but it existed from July 1st, 1991 until last year, sometime last year. Well, HLN kind of took over trials, but until, I guess it was March, the summer of 2013. In any event, I was there for 19 of the 22 years that it existed. And we had a tracking department with a staff of people, three, four, five people, depending on what, you know, when in our existence, whose sole job was to track trials around the country. We had weekly meetings. These trial trackers were assigned regions in the country. And this was actually pre-internet when we first started, so we had stringers. They'd have to call on the phone, and we would have stringers and newspaper reporters around the country who would call in the cases. But then, obviously, with the internet, it became easier to track trials. But it was a full-time job for a staff of people. So I'm trying to track the way we did, but I can only do so much because it's not all I do, and this is not for compensation. So that, I only did through March right now, but I intend to try to, you know, stay on top of cases that certainly we had been following, which are still in the pipeline, and some new ones, just because I don't know who else, you know, who's doing it. I guess we're all kind of doing it scattershot, you know.
Yeah, it's kind of a little bit here and a little bit there.
Right, I'm on the phone with the DA's offices. I'm on the phone with defense lawyers. I'm on the phone with the courts, with public information officers. I'm doing it the way we used to do it. I mean, I have this huge contact list of people, so I'm actually in contact with the people who are, you know, monitoring the judge's calendar inside the courthouse.
Michael in Minnesota, what did you want to say, my dear?
I have a couple questions for Beth. Beth, the Amanda Knox, if the Italian court comes back with a second guilty verdict for Amanda Knox, do you know anything about extradition? Will she be extradited?
I think the chance of that is zero to none. You know, I think, you know, theoretically people think, well, if another country has convicted her, then, you know, if we've got a treaty with them, we should be abiding by that treaty and extraditing her. But the extradition treaties are a little complex. I'm not an expert in them, but I know that they, whatever the country is that has the prosecution, whatever they're doing, the laws they're following, the rules, they've got to be comparable to the United States Constitution. And in our country, we would see this as double jeopardy, that she can get tried over and over again. So I think that we would say, now, it's a violation of our Constitution, and we're not sending her over there. Again, this is not my area, but I think there's a very slim chance that she would be extradited. Now, she may not be able to travel internationally. There could be an international arrest warrant for her lodged with Interpol, so that if she were to go into an EU country, you know, on a passport vacation, she could run the risk of getting picked up and sent to Italy. And, you know, if I were Amanda Knox, we've got a beautiful, huge country in the United States. She's already seen
a lot
of Italy. I would just stay in the U.S.
Absolutely.
I agree.
Now, as far as Oscar Pistorius, do we know anything about South African courts? Do they televise their proceedings? Will we be able to watch?
There have been some cameras, you know, because we saw him in court when he was arraigned. And I did order one law book from South Africa. I'm in touch with one South African attorney, although not lately. And, you know, some of their legal concepts are similar to ours, you know, common law concepts. In the United States, a system of justice is based upon our British roots and in common law, but then each state has promulgated their own statutes. So it's a combination. And, you know, there are some things that are analogous there. They have set aside March 3rd to March 22nd for the trial. I have not heard that it's going to be continued. I mean, I believe that those are the dates. And it may look somewhat similar to our system. And now there have been cameras at some proceedings, so I'm hopeful there'll be a camera at the trial, but I don't know. I have not been in touch with anyone at the courthouse.
Now, does anyone on the show tonight know anything about Luca Magnotta and what's happening with his case in Canada? The horrible, horrible cannibal.
Oh, that's terrible. Yeah, I haven't heard anything about that for a long time. Levi, do you know anything?
No, I'm sorry. You stumped me on that one.
Levi finally stumped. Michael, give us a little back information about this, and people will remember it immediately, I'm sure.
Oh, Luca Magnotta, he made a video. He actually killed little, and I'm sorry, I don't remember the victim's name. That's heinous. But he was a little Oriental kid, and he sawed his head off. I mean, in this video, and it was live. You can find it on the internet. I think I saw it on GoreGrish.com or something. It is the most heinous thing I've ever watched.
Yeah,
and
is.
He also murdered those several other people, it's apparently, and all sorts of just heinous, cruel.
Yeah, we don't know what's. Maybe we can look that up and update next week, because that would certainly be one. We would hope that the our neighbors in Canada would keep him behind bars forever and ever and ever. He certainly doesn't need to be out and about running around. And Beth Karras, I know you have to leave, but thank you so much. And I, you're going to be with us next week with Dr. Robert Blecker, is that correct?
Right.
Good.
Right.
So what are you now? What are you doing this week? We need details, woman. Give us details. What's going on in your life?
Let me just think. I don't have any bookings right now. My next radio show is February 4th. But I don't have any bookings right now. That could change. You know, so that's it. I mean, I'm writing, mm-hmm. I'm researching, I am busy every single day, but that's all I can tell you right now.
Well, do know that you have a huge army of admirers who want you back on the air as soon as possible, because you are so trustworthy and so good. So we're here for you, Beth, anything you need, okay?
Well, thank you, and it was a pleasure tonight. It was nice talking to Michael, you, and Levi.
Look forward
to doing it again, and I will start posting my little calendar, my On the Court docket, on my website, BethKarras.com. It's not up there yet. I just got to fine-tune it, and I want to start posting some documents, but got to figure out how to do it. So because these court documents, and devolved, I'm getting the file, and Michael Dunn, by the way.
Good.
The case that's coming to trial on March 3rd. Those documents should be coming in the next week.
Wonderful.
Okay?
Beth, you're a sweetheart. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you next week, okay?
Thank you. Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Beth.
Thank you.
Isn't she the best? She's just wonderful. We love her.
She is.
We love her.
I adore her.
She is great. You know, and
it's very disturbing to me that, you know, that there's not a television network out there that is covering all of these trials and all of these cases, now that HLN has decided to have their HLN anchors do all of these silly skits. I'm not interested in Name That Tune or Newlywed Game or whatever silly stuff they're doing on HLN now. And I like it. I like HLN. I have a lot of friends over there. But it's sad, because it shows that a lot of these TV people are not really in tune with what the public wants, and it's sort of like the writing is on the wall. When do the ratings go up on these networks? Whenever there is a huge trial,
right?
Casey Anthony got millions of viewers for HLN. Jodi Arias didn't get quite as much as Casey Anthony, but she got millions of viewers as well. As so did George Zimmerman. And cases that people are interested in, and the ratings spike when these big trials happen. And I can understand that they can't cover trials all the time, because HLN is a news network and they can't be 24/7 devoted to them. But I think that they should, you know, whenever there's a case that has captivated people, like Jodi Arias has, like George Zimmerman has, cut in and cover it, instead of just saying we're not going to cover trials, because there's so many people interested. And I don't know about you all, but I like Wild About Trial that streams, and the Trial Divas is another one that streams these trials. But and I do take advantage of that, but it's hard to do it on your computer, because then I want to check my Facebook and my Twitter and my email.
Yes.
And it's hard to stay focused. Like if it's on the television screen, it's easier to be focused on that. So I think that a television network should start a television network specifically devoted to trials and crimes. There's a void for it out there.
It's amazing how expensive it is, though. Beth was going over the cost to send a remote crew to these different sites to cover these trials. The cameraman that they use alone is $3,500 per day, and that's just for his in court. Then you pay on top of that lodging and food, and
yeah,
I mean,
it's
just
outrageous. I've heard about it as well.
Yeah,
well,
I've heard about it as well.
I would,
and you,
but
I think that CNN, though, a lot of times they CNN has affiliates, and I wonder.
Yeah,
if
I was thinking, why couldn't
affiliate?
Why couldn't the local
affiliate?
Why couldn't the local TV stations in the town provide the commentary and the feed for CNN or for whatever outlet? That way you don't have to send your people. That is wildly expensive. But, you know, you have to weigh the cost and how much you can get in advertising, because it has to be profitable. And I think
and
you
I've
can make it
heard
profitable.
That, I heard that streaming the trial is not what's expensive. It's like sending the crew down there.
Yes.
Their own camera crew. I think whoever is the pool camera is what's expensive, but it's not that expensive to stream it if you have an affiliate that will air it.
Right, that's exactly
right. With the
camera
and the court. But according to Beth, now a lot of the HLN and Court TV had it down to a science where they had several cameras and 8 microphones in a court. Because if you notice on some trials where the local media covers it, they'll only put like 2 or 3 mics. And when someone like Juan Martinez is pacing back and forth, you just cannot pick up the audio as well. So it takes a sound engineer with 8 different microphones. It takes someone in a studio somewhere that can do the split screen. So when someone is testifying, you can also see the defendant's reaction. And when the defendant starts crying, you can cut to a split screen and see the mother's reaction or the victim's reaction. So it's really quite complicated to do a really quality
right
show, and that's what they had. They had gotten it down to a fine science, and it's just a shame that they've just decided to eliminate that entirely. I don't understand.
Well, I think that they'll bring it back. I don't see a lot of people tuning in to what is currently on. Maybe I'll be wrong. These people are highly respected. The new general manager of HLN is very well respected, and he's revived other networks. But, you know, just from reading online, from what people have sent me, a lot of people are not very happy about it. They're complaining about it. I've seen where someone had created a petition, and they're circulating a petition for HLN to bring the trials back. So I think that they will at some point. If there's a big case that a lot of people are interested in that gets the attention of people like Casey Anthony and Jody Arias and George Zimmerman, that they'll kind of be forced to.
Well, here's the thing, too. You have to, and I can promise you this.
Because you remember before Casey Anthony, HLN really did not cover a lot of the crime stories. Nancy Grace was the only show there that covered the crime stories, and her ratings blew up with Casey Anthony. And then that's when they brought in Jane Velez Mitchell and Vinnie Politan, and they used some of the in-session people like Beth Karras on their shows more often when things blew up. I think they're just waiting for that case. I mean, there's a lot of cases that have interest there, but there's not a case that really has the Casey Anthony type of interest.
Exactly. But here's the thing I can promise you, Levi and Michael and my wonderful friends listening, and that is, if there is a buck to be made by broadcasting trials, somebody will do it. Somebody will figure it out and get it down to where the cost is as small as it can be, and deliver the trials, which they can sell advertising and therefore make some money. So it's all about the almighty dollar. That's just how it is, and that's what we have to accept. So if it can be done, and I do believe it can be done, Levi, I agree with you. Somebody's going to bring it back. It'll be a big, huge trial, and then maybe it'll slowly evolve into something else. I don't know. We'll have to see. But Levi, let's talk a little bit about what your show is going to be about this week. Do you have any ideas on your guests or what's going on? How'd the first show go?
It was great. I had Holly Hughes on, and we talked about the two cops that I was talking about earlier, who are on trial for killing the homeless man, and Kelly Thomas. I just wanted to point out, I don't want it to be biased, anything that I was saying, like I'm for the prosecution or for the defense, because it's really a tough case, because the victim in this case, Kelly Thomas, who I'm sympathetic for, I don't think you can watch that 33-minute video and not be sympathetic. I mean, he did have a history. I think that I was just reading in preparation for my show, and I don't think I got to mention it, but he had a history of getting violent with some family members in the past,
specifically
his grandfather. So, you know, there, and I don't know if that was admitted into trial. I think it could have been. I'm not positive. I was not able to watch the trial in its entirety because of the holidays, because it's been going on since early December.
Quite a while. Right.
Yeah.
So the
defense does have some things to work with. It's not just a slam dunk case for the prosecution. And the jury's been out a day. They're going to continue their deliberations on Monday.
Oh, that is such a tragic case. Are you going to be talking about it again?
I'll talk about that on, when there's a verdict, I'll update that case. And if you missed my show with Holly Hughes, go to LeviPageShow.com, and there's a link where you can listen. We also, in addition to talking about that case, we talked about the Aaron Hernandez case, who was with the NFL, who was arrested for the murder of Auden Lloyd. He had a beef with Lloyd. They were seen arguing at a nightclub before his murder, and a group of friends of Hernandez went to pick Auden Lloyd up. Aaron Hernandez and his friends, his co-defendants, were the last ones seen with this victim. They allegedly, according to prosecutors, Aaron Hernandez was the mastermind of this attack that left Auden Lloyd dead. Surveillance video captured a Nissan Altima. That's what Aaron Hernandez drove and picked up the victim in this industrial park where the victim's body was last seen, and even surveillance video on Aaron Hernandez's home security depicted Hernandez walking around after the gunshots were heard being fired in that area. Minutes later, he was walking around his home with a gun in his hand. When investigators started investigating this, at first they knocked on his door to ask him questions. He slammed it in their face, didn't cooperate, and now he's being eyed in the a drive-by shooting in Boston as well.
Right.
Two people were killed in a drive-by shooting, and he also was being sued for getting into an argument and shooting someone in the face. He didn't kill them. The person was suing him outside of a strip club in Miami, Florida. So this guy has a history of even failing drug tests while he was in the NFL.
He's just a sweetheart.
Be another trial.
Just
that's
going to
be
sweetheart.
Another trial that I think is going to be big because of all the controversy that surrounds him with these two drive-by shootings. And, you know, there's a lot of speculation on what the motive was for he and his buds to kill Auden Lloyd. It's been rumored that Lloyd had information on him about the two drive-by shootings in Boston and his maybe drug activities, and that's why he killed him.
So we
talked about Aaron Hernandez and that case. LeviPageShow.com has all of that on there. And also, there was another case that has a lot of people on the Internet mad on social media. This is a case that got a lot of traction on social media and then blew up into a big story. I don't know if any of you all are familiar with the Daisy Coleman case. You can go to Twitter and type in the hashtag Justice4Daisy. Even the internet hacktivist group Anonymous got involved in this case. But what this is there's a teenage girl that lived in this town of Mary Mill, Missouri, and her mother woke up one morning to discover her teenage daughter, Daisy, out in the front yard, the front porch in front of the door, like passed out without you know, a coat or shoes on. And mm-hmm. she brought her in to give her a bath, and she had looked like she had been roughed up, took her to a physician. She had tearing through her private area. And the last thing the victim, Daisy Coleman, recalls is that she had been to a boyfriend's home. Not a boyfriend. She had been to a Matthew Barnett is his name. He's 19 years old now. She had mm-hmm. been to this guy's home. She snuck in through a window. I think that he still lived with his parents, and I think he was 18 at the time, and he gave them alcohol to drink, and that was the last mm-hmm. thing that she remembers. She went with a friend. She snuck out of the house. And this Matthew Barnett, you would think would be charged with rape, but
yeah.
was not charged with rape. And Daisy's parents and Daisy said, you know, we wanted to press charges, and the reason that I can use her name tonight, which is usually common practice not to use her name,
mm-hmm.
is she's given interviews. She's appeared on national TV talking about this, saying, why won't the local prosecutors press charges?
And
well,
why won't they?
Here's why. Matthew Barnett is the grandson of a man by the name of Rex Barnett, who was a Missouri state representative, a Republican.
Okay.
And he's since retired, but he was the grandson, and a lot of people are saying that he may have some political pull here.
Mm-hmm.
And a special prosecutor was actually brought in, but we really didn't see anything else. He was charged with, like, child endangerment or something like that, misdemeanor charges.
Mm-hmm.
And he appeared in court Friday afternoon, and he pled guilty, and he got probation.
Oh,
he was not going to be in jail time.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are angry about this. And
yeah.
not only are they angry about that, they're angry at this community of Maryville, Missouri, for not pressing charges, for not being tougher on this.
Yeah.
And also the bullying. I mean, this victim faced some bullying. Mother was abruptly fired from her job after this happened.
Hmm.
She was not given an explanation. They had to move. And here's the big thing that outrages a lot of people is that the victim's family's home had been set on fire.
Oh, no.
And they were unable to determine whether it was foul play, but it coincidentally happened
yes.
right after she accused this grandson of a Missouri politician of rape, and who happened to be a big-time football player for the high school when he was at the high school. He was a football player.
Does the family have money? I know it's, they're politically connected, but are they wealthy as well?
I'm not positive on the
because that's I'm sure
it
was. That's I never understand it when I hear stories like this. It is so obvious that the right thing wasn't done, and how can these? And it's got to take a group of people to make sure the right thing isn't done. And it's like, how can they sleep at night? What do they think we're not going to notice now? Thank God for social media in cases like this, because
well, you know what,
it won't die down.
I don't know if this has been confirmed by any mainstream news media outlets, so people can take this with a grain of salt, but I was just have been reading on Twitter where allegedly this Daisy Coleman has attempted suicide because
have
been people on social media mocking her.
Oh, that's the bad side of social media right there. That is too bad. So you're going to be
the good side of it is that social media really got this case pushing. I mean,
yes.
For anybody out there with Twitter, you can get information on this. Type in just hashtag justice for Daisy or op Maryville, M-A-R Maryville, the town, and you'll get all the information on Twitter, and because social media has really spearheaded this into getting national attention. That's the good side. The bad side is somebody was apparently mocking her, and she attempted suicide, but that's not been confirmed by any major media news outlets.
We do have a random question for you, Levi, and if anybody knows this, it's you. Here we go. Regarding the Haley Dunn case, was the ME autopsy report ever released?
You know, that's a good question. I'll have to search on that because I'm not positive. I'm not positive. You know, I've been out of action for a while, so I haven't been able to keep up with a lot of the cases like I used to, but I'm starting back since my show's back. But I'm not positive on that. Do you know, Michael?
No, I don't know. In fact, I'm just now, I just Googled it as we're talking about it to see.
I don't think it has.
I don't know how badly decomposed her remains were when she was finally found. So I don't know what kind of results could come from an autopsy. Do you know that, Levi? She was missing for 2 years, so I can't imagine
there was
left of her.
She was, and you know, I actually had on my old computer, I had some notes on this with some of the wires way back when, but I'm not updated on this case at all, unfortunately. But I do remember, you know, this case quite well. I remember this, I don't remember the specifics, but I remember, you know, generally, you know, the mother failing a polygraph, as did her boyfriend, Sean Atkins, I think was his name. And I remember the big controversy about the child pornography and the deviant images found in the home. Apparently, this Sean Atkins was viewing. So this is just another case of some parents who should not have had a child. Unfortunately, we see this happen all the time, and something happens to her, and they're suspected, and they're involved in drugs. There was rumors about them being involved in drugs. So it's a common story that we see.
It is, and it's one that we unfortunately hear way too often. So I don't know if I got the answer or not to this, Levi. Do you know what your topic is going to be this Thursday for sure, or are you going to wait kind of till the last minute see what's changing?
Well, I'm going to do an hour show. I haven't got the second half of the show down pat yet, but I do know that Jane Velez Mitchell will be on, and we're going to talk about some of the cases in the news. And the second half I'm still working on. I know that we're going to do an update. This is Thursday night on the verdict. Hopefully there will be a verdict in the Kelly Thomas trial. We're going to do an update on that and maybe some of the big trials and crime cases in the news. So Jane Velez Mitchell will for sure be on.
Well, that is going to be a fantastic guest, and that is going to be a great show. You just go to Levi, you go to www.levipageshow.com, and the link is there to take you to the show. Now, I do have some news. Back in August, I announced that iHeartRadio took some interest in me. iHeartRadio is a huge website that has basically all the big radio stations from all over the country on it. And what they do with their talk radio stations. I don't know if they do this with other people, but they're always looking, the distributors are always looking for new talk show hosts. And they take people and they put them on iHeartRadio and work with them. And then if they like them, they pluck them and put them into syndication. So iHeartRadio is kind of like the farm team of the talk radio genre anyway. But they have music. All the big radio stations are on it. They get millions of hits, you know, every day. It's a wildly popular website. I announced in August that I was going to be on iHeartRadio, and back in August I said it should be in a couple of weeks. Well, it's finally going to happen. It's going to be this Thursday. I do not have a link yet. As soon as I do, I will send it out. It'll be this Thursday at 8 o'clock Eastern, so it won't interfere with your show, Levi. Yours is at 10 p.m. Eastern, right?
Mm-hmm, yes.
Okay, so it won't interfere with yours. 8 o'clock Eastern, Mark Klass is going to be my first guest because he is a good friend and he can rescue me if I start babbling like an idiot. So this is the first kind of foot in the door to hopefully getting a syndicated true crime radio show going. No guarantees here, but at least we've gotten this far. So keep your fingers crossed, because I do think there needs to be a true crime out, at least on the radio, if we're not going to have it on TV. So that pretty much wraps it up.
Congratulations, Trista.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
It was
about time.
A long time coming. Long time coming. It really was. I wasn't sure when they said yes, and then every week there was always something coming up, you know, because I'm just a little old once a week, you know, tryout person. person, and so they have, you know, the big talk shows that they have to worry about. So I am on the bottom of their list, but they finally got it. I'll be doing it from a studio in Salt Lake City. I'll actually have a producer in Los Angeles helping me. It'll be an hour long, so it will be different than this one because it'll be run more, it'll be tight, it'll be much tighter ship, as they say. But as soon as I get the link and everything, I will get it out there, and I'd love to have you listen. It would help a lot if you could tune in and listen. I think it will be available afterwards as well to download. I'm not quite sure on that, but it'll be live Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern. Michael at Minnesota and Levi Page, thank you both so much for joining us tonight. I really appreciate you both. Levi, we'll be watching for your, we'll be listening to your show this Thursday night. Michael, as always, thank you. You're doing a lot of work for Beth, and we thank you for that because that helps Beth, and we love her. So thank you, Michael.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
Oh. And everybody, do remember that this show is sponsored by the wonderful people at Paws for Purple Hearts in Palo Alto, California. Paws for Purple Hearts is the very first program of its kind to offer therapeutic intervention for veterans and active duty military personnel by teaching those with post-traumatic stress disorder how to train service dogs for their comrades with combat-related injuries. Take just a moment, please, and go to www.pawsforpurpleheartsdot.org. And it's time now for the final legal goo of the night, and I won't make it too gooey this time, I promise. Opinions expressed on Trisha's True Crime Radio are those of the hosts and guests, and do remember, Trisha's True Crime Radio is a completely separate entity from WebSleuths.com, LLC, and ForumsForJustice.org. We will be back next week with Professor Robert Blecker, and we'll talk about his amazing book, The Death of Punishment. We have some amazing audio clips as well from people on death row and the guards that guard them. You will be stunned at what they say. That's next week on Trisha's True Crime Radio, 8 p.m. Eastern, where we always discuss true crime and current events. And, of course, we do it with common sense. Good night, everyone.